is up when the camera...
You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Have you been counting calories, spending over your food budget to always buy organic, running out to buy acai, those berries, because they have antioxidant powers? Well, Mark Bittman, author of the New York Times column The Minimalist and the How to Cook Everything book, says relax. His recent book, Food Matters, A Guide to Conscious Eating, outlines a simple plan that he claims is good for the environment and your health and will help you save money and lose weight, too. It's just been released in a paperback edition by Simon & Schuster, and it brings Mark Bittman to our show again. Welcome back.
Always great to be here.
And you came on the show last February when this book was published in hardcover. Have you updated in any way?
I rewrote the introduction because I started to feel... that I needed to become a little bit more. People were encouraging me to speak out a little bit more on policy. So that's kind of what's happened with me in the last year or so.
Well, in February, we did discuss a UN report that 18% of greenhouse gases are produced by agriculture. That report is now about 3 years old. Have countries taken action to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from agriculture?
Well, just to be clear, it's industrial agriculture we're talking about, and it's industrial agriculture, raising of livestock we're talking about.
Mostly methane?
Mostly methane, mostly beef. And I would say, no, I don't think there have been a lot of positive changes on the part of government.
Do you know if it was even discussed in Copenhagen?
I don't think it was discussed in Copenhagen. I do think we're seeing movement, but I think we're seeing movement on a local level, on an individual level, to some extent in Congress, not specifically with beef, but in general in terms of diet, obesity, and that's certainly related to climate. I mean, it's all tied together.
Well, you cite a CIA estimate that Americans' life expectancy is the 46th in the world. First of all, what is the CIA doing worrying about that?
Well, someone's got to worry about it, I guess. I mean, yeah, you know, the obesity issue, I think, is where there's a lot of action right now. And I think, you know, the numbers are staggering. We're twice as heavy as we were 20 years ago. Adolescents are 3 times as many adolescents are obese as they were 20 years ago. We get 7% of our calories from soda. I mean, then you can go on and on. So we are unhealthy and rapidly becoming unhealthier. And to the extent that other countries adopt our lifestyle, things will get worse there too. So maybe our life expectancy will climb as others fall.
American hegemony means that people all over the world are now eating more beef than they did in the past. Is it mostly beef?
Well, people all over the world are eating more animal protein than they did in the past. Numbers of farm-raised fish are up globally. Pork and chicken is way up globally. But beef is the big damaging thing in terms of global warming, in terms of rainforest, biodiversity, land destruction. Beef is really the worst, and the numbers are climbing. As people become wealthier, they want to eat meat.
You mentioned farm-raised fish. Isn't that a mixed story? Because we're also hearing about any number of species being endangered because of overfishing. So what do we do? We raise them in the farms and at least keep them alive, or
when I give talks, I almost never mention fish, and then someone always asks me, and I say, well, I mean, I have to answer the question, but it is the hardest question there is, because wild fish, from a culinary perspective and from a health perspective, wild fish is in every way superior to farm-raised fish.
Tastes better.
Right. Tastes better. It's less damaging to the environment, except to the fish itself. So now you have this problem of, well, if you tell people to eat wild fish, they're going to be extinct. You can't do that.
But what about mercury and lead? Aren't they an issue with wild fish?
Well, they are. There are all sorts of issues with wild fish. But, I mean, from a culinary perspective, from a health perspective, if you can find the right wild fish, you're doing great for yourself, but you're not doing so well for your fish. But from, you know, to just tackle farm-raised fish for a second, we know it doesn't taste as good. It really is chicken of the sea in the sense that it is raised very much like farm-raised chicken. So it's environmentally destructive, and it's just not great stuff.
Well, I've been told that tilapia is not really bad. The way they raise the tilapia, there are some other fish that are a bigger problem. But tilapia has to be one of the most boring fish in the world.
Yeah, I mean, every couple of years I try it because I feel like, well, I haven't tried it. Maybe it's better. And it still tastes like mud to me.
Now, a lot of stores are now labeling fish, line caught, wild, farm raised. But there are plenty that don't.
Well, we do have country of origin labeling now. So,
is that everywhere? If I go to Chinatown right now.
Well, no, of course not. Chinatown's a different story. But in supermarkets, you're going to see fish labeled as to their country of origin. You should be able to find out whether it's farm-raised or wild, and you should be able to find out whether it's frozen, whether it was frozen or not. The problem is you still need to make judgments about all of these things, and it's a very, very – it's always been complicated, and it's no less complicated now.
My guest is Mark Bittman. His book, Food Matters, A Guide to Conscious Eating, has just been released in a paperback edition. It was a bestseller as a hardcover. And it is published by Simon & Schuster Paperbacks. The last time we discussed the influence of the food industry on the federal government through lobbying and commodity boards, which promote the interests of particular producers. Have you seen a change for the better in American food policy in the year since?
No. But I think there's a lot of light on the horizon, I think. And I think one thing we're seeing is a tendency for people who are concerned about the environment, concerned about world hunger, concerned about personal health and diet, and concerned about the quality of the food they eat to all realize that this is the same struggle. So we have movement on a local and an organizational level that we didn't have before.
But we have these environment bills in Congress. We have the health bill in Congress. Is nutrition even mentioned in them?
The health bill, you know, as Michael Pollan points out, the health bill is really great for the food world, because when you start pressuring insurance companies, they start becoming concerned about what people are eating, because obesity-related diseases cost as much in the United States now as Social Security or more. And globally, lifestyle-related diseases are now bigger killers than communicable diseases, which is really something. So I think insurance companies are going to start saying, wait, if people eat better, we reduce our costs, we raise our profits.
What about Michelle Obama gardening in the back of the White House? Is that PR, or do you think that'll have a real effect?
Well, both. I think it's PR, and I think it will have a real effect. I wish that she talked a little bit more about the critical. I mean, obesity is, you know, it's a corny to say it, but obesity is an epidemic, and it's a killer. 50% of all kids who were born in the year 2000 are going to have diabetes by 2050. And diabetes never goes away once you get it. And I wish that were being a little bit more I wish we were being a lot more directly addressed. On the other hand, it is good to say to people you can be in control of your own food, and that's what gardens are about, and it's important not to eat junk food and so on. So I think she's saying that, you know, for a first lady, she's probably doing as much as she can.
Well, we're talking on a federal level, and that's where probably the greatest impact can take place. But what about on local level? For example, here in New York, Mayor Bloomberg made Snapple an official city marketing partner and allowed it to operate vending machines in the public schools. Now there's an ad campaign in the subways showing a hand pouring pure fat, what looks like a Snapple bottle.
Out of a soda bottle. Well, I think that Snapple partnership has got to go, frankly. And, you know, we had a great health commissioner in Tom Frieden, and we have a good one now. And Frieden's now the head of CDC. So I think we're going to see a lot of action, especially in the world of soda, or better put, sweetened beverages. And I think we're going to see that in activity by state's attorney general. I think we're going to see that on a state level before we see it anywhere else.
Well, the mayor has been waging a campaign for years to get people to cut down on their salt intake.
Salt, I don't think, is as big. The problem with salt is that most salt that people eat, or most harmful salts that people eat, are included in processed foods. So should processed foods be regulated? Absolutely, as far as I'm concerned. Table salt, I don't think, is a big deal. I think that Bloomberg, if the mayor thought, well, I'm sure he thinks carefully, but if he thought this through, he would see that soda and processed foods are nearly as great a threat to the population of the city as tobacco has been, and he'd get to work on that stuff.
By the way, we are inviting calls from our listeners. Our number here is 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. A listener did call in and said there's a new system for farming fish that releases zero discharge and water is recycled in the system. It's something that's happening on the Hudson. I don't know if you've heard about that. I haven't either.
There are a lot of people working really hard on making farm-raised fish work. So, you know, eventually it may be solved, but you've got to have this combination of environmental neutrality or close to it and decent taste. I mean, if you want protein that's environmentally not too bad and doesn't taste like much, you have tofu, and it's cheap, too. So, you know, if you give me a choice between tilapia and tofu, I'll eat tofu. It's simple.
But another concern about food and the environment is just the carbon footprint that shipping makes. We can't do anything about oranges and bananas, can we?
We can't do anything except not eat them. But I think it's safe to say that everything we do has an impact. And the real question is, how do you minimize that impact, and how do you live in peace on the planet? I mean, it's corny. It's the same old question, but it's a tough answer.
Well, should we only eat locally produced produce?
Well, my straight answer, if that were a yes-no question, I'd say no. But I would say we should eat
oranges and drink orange juice.
You know, oranges have been a luxury for thousands of years.
Yeah, but we do need the vitamin C. Is there another way to get it?
Yeah, there's vitamin C in green vegetables also. I mean, you could live without oranges easily enough, and you could certainly live without bananas. I think it's important that we eat more locally. I think that eating exclusively locally is missing the point.
And then meat is all, in fact, a lot of fish as well, is it processed elsewhere and then eventually shipped? Much meat is Cryovac, and is it Dubuque or Des Moines or somewhere?
The Midwest for sure, both, I think. Well, you know, if you're looking to reduce your carbon footprint, the single most important thing you can do is reduce your intake of animal products and starting with beef. So it's not really a question of transportation, although that's a factor. It's a question of production.
Well, we've talked in the past, not just when this book came out, but when you did your How to Cook Everything Vegetarian book came out, about your attitude toward vegetarianism.
Well, I think that vegetarianism is, be kind to your unnecessary. I think that it's important that people look at the proportions of the food that they're eating and make a shift toward more and more plant-based foods, but that includes abandoning to some extent dairy and other animal products that many vegetarians rely on. I think the important thing to do is to try to get the percentage of calories you get from plants as high as you possibly can. And then everything else doesn't matter. Whether it's Snickers or beef or dairy or whatever at that point, that's not that important. If we were to get 70, 80, 90% of our calories from unprocessed plants as opposed to 10%, which most Americans get now, we'd be really making some serious headway.
How many pounds of animal products, meat, eggs, and dairy, do we eat in a typical week?
Typical week would be about 10.
10 pounds?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
we're close to
600 pounds a person a year in meat, God, dairy, all animal products together.
My guest is Mark Bittman. We're talking about the new paperback edition of his New York Times bestseller, Food Matters, A Guide to Conscious Eating, now available in a paperback edition from Simon & Schuster Paperbacks. It also includes 75 recipes, because I doubt that you could ever put out a book that doesn't have recipes, Mark.
You know, the idea of Food Matters was that it was going to be an essay, but then it was so clear that this style of eating is different than that. And as you say, people expect recipes of me. So I developed this relatively small number, and we have a bigger Food Matters cookbook coming out, I hope, this year.
Meanwhile, we're inviting listener calls at 212-433-9692. We'll be back with those calls and more of our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We're back with Mark Bittman, who's the author of the best-selling Mark Bittman's Kitchen Express, How to Cook Everything and Other Cookbooks, and of the weekly New York Times column, The Minimalist. His work has appeared in countless newspapers and magazines. He's a regular on the Today Show, and I can't call you a regular on this show, but...
Sort of.
You've been here a lot, and you're always welcome back, and our listeners love you. In fact, we'll be taking some of their calls in just a few moments. The latest book is an update on Food Matters, A Guide to Conscious Eating, and updated as a paperback from Simon & Schuster paperbacks. And let's go to some of the calls that we are receiving. Miriam from Westchester, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Leonard. Thank you for taking my call. Hi, Mark Bittman.
Hi.
First of all, I wanted to say that I do agree that, more of our diet should be plant-based. However, I have a real issue with the way you've just portrayed obesity. You are greatly exaggerating the impact that obesity is having on our health. I know this is not a popular view, but if you want to cite statistics, I ask that you back it up, your sources. And what you're doing, in effect, is saying it's the fat people whose fault it is that we have global warming because we're clearing way too much land in order to raise cattle to and livestock to feed, these fat, greedy people. I really have a problem with that.
Mark?
I actually did not say that, but I do say that eating a half a pound of animal of meat a day on average is way too much and unsustainable.
There, anybody who has traveled around the country has seen, in some places, a lot of very overweight people and wondered why that happens. In New York, we don't see it as much. We don't see it as much in San Francisco, in Chicago, and the reason given generally is these are walking cities.
Well,
that it's not just a matter of what we eat, but also the kind of life that we live, driving around in our own cars, being rather sedentary.
Well, of course,
watching much too much American Idol on television.
We are, as a nation, we are eating one-third more calories than we were eating 20 or 30 years ago. So unless you work those calories off, you're going to gain weight. And right now a third of the people in the country are obese and a third are overweight. And those are the numbers. New Yorkers and other people who live in big cities do tend to walk more. So there is a compensatory factor there too. But I think there are other factors involved.
A listener in Hackensack asks, how can the food distribution be radically changed without eliminating or drastically rewriting the Farm Bill, which is the heaviest lobbied bill there is to date?
Well, I would say, certainly I'm in favor of rewriting the Farm Bill, but assuming that's not going to happen anytime soon since it was just renewed last year. Two things. I think that individuals can look at their own diet, as I said before, and change the proportion of animal products versus plants that they eat. And most people can benefit by swapping those completely, by flipping the numbers. And the second thing is, as I alluded to before, I think we're going to start to see some action in individual states on soda and junk food and school policy. I think the Child Nutrition Act, which is up for renewal this year, is going to make a big difference in what our kids are fed in schools. So I think we're going to see some stuff start to happen legislatively that's really positive. But I also, I'm not a personal responsibility kind of guy, but we can make a big difference in our own lives by changing the way we eat.
Your guidelines seem pretty basic. Should we worry about getting enough antioxidants and omega-3s? And should we be popping vitamin pills?
I don't, and I don't worry about it so much. But what I will say is that we should not rely on. The other day, I saw a bottle of. I can't remember, but it was orange flavored diet 7-Up, with 10% of your daily requirement of vitamin E. That is not the place to get your antioxidants.
What about these new ads for Pepsi and Coke that?
Use real sugar.
Real sugar now.
Yeah. I mean, this is the soda industry, which I think there are some progressive voices in there, but for the most part, I think is really criminal at this point. And average American, again, takes in 200 to 300 calories a day, useless calories in the form of soda. And you know, that's, if you do that, you will gain weight and you will increase your risk of diabetes. These are facts.
You're right. Use canola oil if you must. Well, what does that mean? People are recommending now that we use canola oil or safflower oil rather than butter and the other oils. Olive oil only when you really want the flavor. Never corn oil, I'm told.
I don't know what to say about oil. I think canola oil tastes bad. I think most corn oil tastes bad. But I'm starting to think that almost all chemically extracted oil tastes bad, and that the reason we like olive oil is not just because it's fragrant and has a lovely taste, but because it's cold pressed. For the most part, it's cold pressed, and I'm beginning to think that that's something you can really experience. Not just is it better for you, but it's really much better cooking medium.
A listener, Shane in Greenpoint, people are getting angry. They're defending their lifestyles here. We love to vilify processed foods, but isn't the fat in a pork belly at per se just as bad as that in a Dorito? If we want to regulate something, why don't we regulate jogging 5 miles a day?
Those are two different questions. I mean, I'm sitting here saying that I think people should eat fewer animal products and less processed food. I'm not sitting here saying people should jog 5 miles a day, because that's an even more difficult thing to regulate.
Mm-hmm. So it's really...
Would you rather have pork belly or Doritos? I don't know. It's a toss-up. The point is,
from a bowl of Doritos? I probably would rather
eat
it.
But even if I were to cook the pork belly, you'd probably rather have it. I could do a halfway decent job. But the point is, you can't have both on a regular basis, that is daily, and expect to maintain a healthy lifestyle.
But you're also, your message here is just be sensible about things, isn't it? You're not saying don't do this, do that. You're saying, you know, you can do all of these things, but if you do them in a sensible way and, you know, you can eat meat, but if you want. But if you do it sensibly. Don't eat it all the time. You restrict yourself to meat after 6 o'clock, is it?
Yeah, well, that's my little scheme. That's my scheme. I'm a strict vegan until six, and I don't eat anything processed until six, and then I eat what I want. But the point is that, in general, what I'm saying is that people will benefit by taking a careful look at their own diets and saying, how can I eliminate animal products and processed foods, or reduce animal products and processed foods? Because statistically, the numbers are there. We eat a half a pound of meat per day per American, and that is way too much. It's unsustainable and it's unhealthy.
My guest is Mark Bittman, who writes the Minimalist column in the New York Times, and I'm always amazed that he can come up with more and more recipes week after week.
Me too.
His latest book is a paperback edition of Food Matters, A Guide to Conscious Eating, a paperback edition of the New York Times bestseller that was released last year. It's from Simon & Schuster paperbacks. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Yeah, well, you said you are surprised. How do you?
Well, I work at it, but, you know, one of the things about the column that's kind of odd is that we now have this huge library of minimalist columns on nytimes.com. There's 700, something like 700 minimalist columns. So it's very difficult for me to argue that I should be doing a roast chicken recipe unless I better my last roast chicken recipe, because everybody can find it. So it's challenging, but, you know, I continue to travel, I continue to cook, I continue to talk to other cooks, and it's working.
Don in Manhattan says, for breakfast, what non-processed foods would you recommend? Bread, cereal, yogurt, milk, juice? What of these would you qualify as non-processed?
Well, I think oatmeal is really the best standby for breakfast for people. And I
can't eat it every day.
No, you can't, but you can eat, I think you can eat whole grains 3-4 times a week without much of a problem. I mean, I do, and I have oatmeal, I have polenta, I have mixed grains, I have leftover rice, I have things like that. After that, fruit. I mean, I think fruit is really good for. I mean, I personally like savory breakfast, so for me, I can have bok choy and mushrooms at breakfast to be quite happy. But obviously, that's not for everyone.
Do you think dim sum is a good idea for breakfast?
Well, I certainly like it.
If the dumplings are steamed, we go now to Ethan from Brooklyn. Hi, Ethan. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to ask Mr. Bittman if he could address the myth of the Green Revolution, the idea that industrial farming is somehow needed in order to feed the whole world.
I'm not. Thanks for the question. I'm not sure what's needed to feed the whole world. I mean, you're absolutely right. Industrial agriculture is not doing it because it's unsustainable.
But is it a myth of the Green Revolution? I think the Green Revolution actually is slightly separate from industrial farming.
Well, the Green Revolution brought us industrial farming, I think, and certainly we're feeding more people than we ever have before, and proportionally the number of hungry people in the world has shrunk, and I might add at the same time the number of overweight people in the world has grown, some public health officials now think obesity is as much of a threat as undernutrition. But I think the point is that we have to look at what we're growing. And I hate to sound like a broken record, but what's difficult to produce is livestock for widespread consumption. So when beef and other animal products are seen as a treat and we concentrate on growing fruit and vegetables for everybody, fruit and vegetables and grains for everybody to get most of their calories from, I think that gives us a shot at a sustainable and relatively undamaged form of agriculture.
Last year, you said that people all over the world were experimenting with healthy fast foods, but that they haven't made their way to American change yet. What would be a healthy fast food?
Well, I think the Chipotle sort of points the way in that direction. Their food is... They make an effort to use naturally raised products. They make an effort to avoid antibiotics, and they make an effort to have a decent proportion of grains and vegetables, that is specifically legumes, versus animal products in their product. On the other hand, there's a fair amount of fat in there, and they're really, really high calorie. A lot of this stuff is really high calorie, but it's a move in the right direction. I know a lot of young people who are trying to do fast food in a healthy way, and people have lots of great ideas. I mean, you see this new chain, Maoz, which I think is from originally from Spain, Maoz, and I'm not plugging them, but you know, they're a chain that's selling falafel and other foods like that on a fast food basis. And in the neighborhood of the Times, where they just opened one, the lines are out the door, whereas the lines at Domino's, Burger King, McDonald's, and whatever else we have in our neighborhood, Dunkin' Donuts, are not out the door. So
you're promoting Maoism?
They're Maoists, yes. Maybe it's not pronounced Maoz, but it's M-A-O-Z. Maoz.
Mike from Middletown, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Leonard. Hi, Mark. I can't agree with you more, Mark. I'm a personal trainer, and I recommend to my clients to eat less and mostly vegetables, like your book. 80 to 90% of your calories absolutely should be taken from vegetable matter. Diabetes, heart disease, and all those things go away when you lose weight. The clients who don't follow my eating style, which is basically healthy foods, doesn't have to be low caloric, high nutritionally dense foods, is the key to a healthy lifestyle. And having a waistline that was like when you were in your 20s. If you can pinch more of an inch on your stomach, you're probably eating too much fat in your diet and too much processed foods. So one of my old doctors told me, if it doesn't grow out of the ground, you should think twice about eating it.
It all makes sense, but sadly, I'm pinching 2 inches of fat on my stomach.
you should come see me, Mark. I can help you with that. But anyway, you know, even dairy products, high-fat dairy products, are really not – the only animals that eat dairy after they're weaned are human beings. And it's probably not the best way to eat. And you know, moderation is the key, but most people can't – portion control doesn't work. The more vegetables you eat, the more fruit you eat, the fuller you're going to be and the less fat you're going to be. So I can't agree with you more. More people should buy your book, absolutely.
Well, I can't agree with you more, but I'm worried about my pinching the fat here. So.
I'm not even going to try. I'm told that the chain is pronounced Maoz, and it's Israeli.
Israeli, so, Spanish, practically the same thing.
But Maoz would be, I could see it right now in Hebrew letters.
Yes, me too.
A few weeks ago, we had Michael Pollan on our show to discuss his new book called Food Rules. I don't know if you've seen that.
I have.
You seem to have very similar views.
Well, we do. I think, you know, I think if we ever got in the same room and had a conversation, we'd disagree about a few things, but I think we'd agree on, you know, 95% of what there is to discuss in this world. Yeah. I mean, I think he's doing great work.
One of our listeners says that most of us learn our bad habits from our parents, and it's kind of hard to break that. You don't agree?
I disagree. I mean, of course we have learned many bad habits. We have learned some bad habits from our parents, but when you are looking at the junk food industry, just to use a little shorthand here, you are looking at the biggest marketing effort in the history of the world. Hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars annually, billions of dollars each decade. This is not our parents' fault. This is us being told you don't need to cook, you need food that's convenient, stuff that's really salty, really sweet, really high in fat tastes best. And it's unavoidable. I mean, I talked to David Kessler, our former FDA commissioner, about this, and he said, just next time you're in an airport, listen to the voices of these fast food chains calling to you. Have a burger, have a Cinnabon, have a soda, have a shake, have a pretzel. It's just, it's nonstop. It's really nonstop.
And Michael Pollan points out, or one of his rules is don't eat anything that your grandmother wouldn't call food. So if it's just a matter of inheriting things, then why didn't your parents inherit those attitudes from your grandparents? It's because the world has changed and marketing has changed. And I mean, my mother's idea of broccoli and cauliflower were pretty much the same, a frozen block.
Those cute little boxes. there's so much food that my grandmother wouldn't recognize if she were alive. She wouldn't know what was going on.
Well, anyway, you keep on fighting the good fight, Mark, okay?
Well, thank you.
And we'll continue reading The Minimalist, where you do not promote processed foods. But
absolutely
you
not.
You did give us recipes that are easier to make, and that's a way of encouraging us to eat well, and I appreciate that. The book, Food Matters, has 75 recipes in it, subtitled A Guide to Conscious Eating, and it is published now in paperback by Simon & Schuster. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thanks, Len. I'll see you later this year, I'm sure.